This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, there's the Saturday feel. You're out there, you've been driving around, taking the kids to basketball games or archery tournaments or indoor soccer, whatever you're doing. Or maybe you're going to art class. Maybe you're going to a piano recital. Whatever it is, you're listening to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. I am Brad Porter on this just picture postcard perfect day here in Kansas City and across the Midwest. The Chamber of Commerce, congratulations on this weather. Gary Lezak from 41 Action News said it would be this way, right? Let's see. We've had some great guests on the show so far. Kenny DePolliams from Spectrum Sports talking KU basketball. Al Fitzmaurice, former Royals right-hander, talking Royals baseball and Fan Fest. If you want to go downtown today for some Fan Fest, Matt Wheeler from ESPN gave us a good peek inside the work he's doing getting ready for the NBA draft and what they think about Michael Porter Jr. from Mizzou and Devontae Graham and Svi Mykhailiuk from KU, as well as Trae Young and some of the other good young players. Coming up at 11:30, Jarrett Sutton is going to join us. You can hear him regularly on the Border Patrol in the morning with Stephen St. John, Nate Bicady, and Jake Gutierrez. But the former Missouri Tiger will join us. We'll talk Mizzou, Mississippi State. The Tigers are left out of the Big 12 SEC Challenge. We'll talk about other games as well. And that sets up a full day here at Sports Radio 810 WHB. Coming up at noon, a little less than an hour, Joshua Briscoe is going to be here taking over for Jayhawk Game Day, which is a great, fun, entertaining show to listen to. So that'll be on at noon. Then at 2 o'clock, the Kansas Network pregame show. Kansas and Texas A&M live at 3:30. And then the night is capped off with some NBA, Boston Celtics and Golden State Warriors. By the way, I should check the schedule ahead of time. One thing you want to do is not bag the product that you might be airing. And we just kind of bagged the Pro Bowl a little bit, and that's okay. I'm not a fan of the Pro Bowl. But if you are a fan of the Pro Bowl, it will be on Sports Radio 810 WHB Sunday afternoon, pregame at 1:30 with the Pro Bowl at 2. And that's after Danny Klinkscale is in here tomorrow morning. He'll be doing Sports Sunday from 9 a.m. to noon. We got all that run down. I think I got everything covered here. And now to cover everything for the Chiefs, the Super Bowl, and the National Football League is Nick Jacobs from 41 Action News. Nick, welcome to the show. Hope you're enjoying a beautiful Saturday here in Kansas City.
I know, and I appreciate that you didn't make me get up too early, so I can really enjoy it, you know?
Gave you the late slot.
Well, all I'm saying, it's very rare that you have my college roommate and former coworker is a guest in front of me. A guy I went to high school with, and Jarrett Sutton at Oak Park behind me. I'm just saying that is that's the first time for me.
It's all about you, Nick Jacobs. Hey, you know what's great, and we're going to get to Chiefs here, but you work at 41 Action News, and I've been down there a handful of times to do Sunday Sound Off with Mick Schaefer. You're at a great location on the Plaza, not far from Brush Creek. You guys have a great outdoor patio. Are you guys, you know, the last couple of days, have the people at 41 Action News been getting outside for their lunch and dinner breaks?
I don't know if they have or not. I hope they have. But, I mean, I'm down there editing, so I don't have time to go pop up there and check that out. But you never know. I mean, with this weekend, they may have to stop up there and take a minute.
Yeah, take a walk around the plaza. It'll be a good time. All right, Nick Jacobs, let's talk Chiefs, Super Bowl, and the National Football League. Let's start with the Chiefs, and the big news story this week is they have decided to retain defensive coordinator Bob Sutton. And I was not at all shocked or surprised by that release. But this is what I started thinking about, and I started thinking about the Dick Vermeil years. And Dick Vermeil wanted to win as much as anybody. He wanted the highest-scoring offense. He wanted to win games, all that good stuff. That said, the Dick Vermeil era and the end of the Carl Peterson era was a lot about protecting your friends, getting the paycheck, and making as much as you can before the ride is over. And I don't know if that's the case here because Andy Reid doesn't comment very, very much, but it has that kind of feel. Bob Sutton's defenses are not performing. Personnel issues. System issues, but he gets to stay on. It reminded me a little bit of Dick Vermeil holding on to Greg Robinson too long. Am I wrong to think that?
I think that's kind of the vibe I've felt in a way with this since it's been announced by Therese Paylor, the Kansas City Star, while he's down there at the Senior Bowl, which, by the way, Therese the amount of stories you broke this week between that and Mike
Amazing.
Kafka being the quarterback's coach, and he just talked to Alex yesterday, and Alex talking about wanting to stay here, but he's open to whatever his future may be. Therese's been on fire this week.
Well, the great thing for Therese Paylor and the Kansas City Stars is that when you go to the Pro Bowl or the Senior Bowl, you're not surrounded by people who try to prevent you from asking certain questions.
It's a solid point. It is just one-on-one.
But you're right. Therese has done a great job, and he's tweeted out all those stories. But anyway, back to Bob Sutton. Yep.
Yes. Yeah, with Greg Robinson, I know you remember, too, that press conference that Vermeil had when Greg Robinson, quote-unquote, resigned.
Yeah.
And just the way Vermeil kind of – the way he kind of – it seemed like he was yelling at the media in that press conference about how great of a person Greg was and everything. Like, it was the media's fault that his defense – that Robinson's defense didn't perform and that he didn't want Donnie Edwards and he was dropping Ryan Sims in the zone coverage. And I remember they forced a lot of turnovers that year to try to go with that offense of Vermeil to get him more possessions. But I could tell Vermeil didn't want to do it, and I don't know if Vermeil actually ever did it. I'm wondering – I always wondered if there was somebody above him that said, yeah, we kind of need to do this, and then they brought Gunther back. And I remember they were talking about Dave McGinnis at the time as a defensive coordinator before they settled on Greg Robinson. And you just kind of – and I've always kind of wondered, I was like, if they'd gotten McGinnis, would that have been different? And so that's just something I've always kind of wondered with that aspect. But, yeah, with what Andy did, I mean, I'm not – like you said, I'm not surprised either that he did it. I fully expected him to come back because I gave it till that Friday after the playoff game. And I was like, okay, if they do something like Friday, then, you know, I kind of see that as a deadline to where there's not emotion involved in it. But at the same time, it's giving you enough time to evaluate what is and isn't working. The benefit that Bob had in 2000, especially 2015 – is how many stars they had on that side of the ball. Because in this summer, I talked about a lot on Twitter, is if you look at what Andy's had on a typical basis, Andy had Jamal Charles and Travis Kelce. He had Jamal in 13, Kelce after the microfracture in his leg, he came back in 14 and 15, and then they added Tyreek in 16, but Jamal really wasn't a big part of it. So Andy's really only had, in my opinion, two guys to work with. But if you look at the defense, Sutton's had Eric Berry, he's had Marcus Peters, he's had Sean Smith, he's had Dontari Poe, he had a great defensive line in 15. He had a good linebacking core that was still in their prime until 2016 when it started kind of hitting, and then 17 it really hit. And, I mean, Bob had a lot to work with his first 3 years, and then you've kind of seen when he's had lesser talent to work with that the scheme – has underperformed a great deal, and the adjustments against better quarterbacks has not been there. So, I mean, Andy gave him a second chance, and it'll be interesting to see what happens here because, I mean, this is Andy's – I mean, Andy's putting it out there that, hey, I believe in this guy, so if I'm Sutton, I better do everything I can to show – to return that type of faith.
You're listening to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. I'm Brad Porter. We're talking with Nick Jacobs from 41 Action News. Follow him on Twitter, @Jacobs71. Does a great job of breaking down the Chiefs. So the retention of Bob Sutton as defensive coordinator now puts a lot of pressure on Bob Sutton. It puts pressure on Andy Reid for making the decision to keep him. And it puts pressure on general manager Brett Veach to go find some more talent and decide whether or not Derek Johnson and Tamba Hali are still providing a valuable enough piece of the puzzle to stay with the Chiefs. Pressure's on the GM now because the decision's been made on the coaches. Now the GM's got to get the players.
Yeah, I agree 100%. The most pressure's on Brett Veach right now to bring in a lot of personnel because the biggest thing is Dorsey left them in a cap situation where they're over and they have a lot of aging stars that are making money that doesn't match their production. And unfortunately, like you said, Brett's going to have to make a big decision this year. They're going to have to decide how much of that front seven do they want to turn over and invest younger, cheaper, faster, or do they want to get some established veterans to replace some that have aged? And then on top of that, if they want to go get another corner, because, I mean, just from my checklist, they need three defensive linemen, and that may, one of those may be rotational purposes, but I think they're going to need two starters. One of them's going to have to be a nose tackle, and another one's going to have to be an end, and then they're going to have to figure out who's the edge rusher opposite Houston, and then you need an edge rusher to kind of help Houston get some rest from time to time. And then inside linebacker position, they got to decide after what happened with Kevin Pierre-Lewis yesterday if they want to re-sign him, and then they're going to have to figure out what they want to do with who's going to play next to Ragland, like you said, because Derek had two Achilles injuries, and the first one, he came back with superhuman ability, and I was amazed at how well he was doing, how well he cut, how well he exploded off that Achilles. But then after the second one, you saw what I expected to see the first time after the first Achilles injury, and it's and then with Tomba's knees have been bad for a while, and he needs a lot of rest, and even that rest this year didn't help. And then Dee Ford with the back injury, you're going to have to wonder if that back injury is going to start reoccurring, and it's a big year to decide on him if they want to get out of that contract or if they want to maintain it. So they got a lot of decisions on that defensive side of the ball. Personally, if I were them, I'd get rid of most of that money and rebuild on that defense, because then in a way, if you're looking at it from a glass half full, Sutton is explaining a new message to new players. So maybe for some of those players, if that message has gotten old and tired, maybe this is a rejuvenation for everybody involved.
I'll be good if I never see Dee Ford in a Chiefs jersey again. Nothing personal. He's a likable guy. He doesn't belong as a starting player in the National Football League. He just doesn't.
Well, I think with Dee Ford, his biggest challenge always was that he came from a 4-3 system with his hand in the dirt going against the right tackle. That's where his comfort level was. That's where his wheelhouse was. Then once you go to a stand-up edge rusher, you have to learn a lot more technique to be able to be successful, and you got to be stout against the run, things he didn't have to do whenever he was at Auburn. And then they rotated him over to go against the left tackle, and he still needed to learn those things, and he was just to one counter move at that point in 4 years. So, yeah, like you said, there hasn't been enough development there, and it unfortunately hasn't worked out for him.
All right, you mentioned the salary cap. By the way, we're talking with Nick Jacobs from 41 Action News, talking Chiefs, Super Bowl in the National Football League. Since you brought it up, John Dorsey left this team in a bad spot in terms of the salary cap. You mentioned, you know, if you let Derek Johnson, Tom Bahali, and a couple other guys go, you free up some space. But it all comes back to the same question: what to do with Alex Smith? And this will be the biggest decision of young Mr. Veach's general manager career. He's only been there a year, and Andy Reid, you can bet, is going to have a say. Over what happens at quarterback. But if you trade Alex Smith, that's $17 million you can spend wherever you want. But if you really want to upgrade that defense, that's a big chunk of change.
You're right. That definitely is. After I did the numbers, if they got rid of every big contract that they had, they would be almost $75 million under the cap. Now, that's a lot of holes you got to replace on defense, and that's two of them on offense you'd have to replace as well. But that's a lot of money to work with, not just this year, but next year and down the road as well. And that's something, if I was in their shoes, I would be willing to do, because you're going to need to start building this team around Patrick Mahomes for the long term. But going back to your Alex Smith part, something that I would have liked to have seen a long time ago when Dorsey was still here was whenever they were in that 2014 season, I would have liked to have seen them force Alex to perform and then franchise tagged him the following year and drafted a quarterback at that time instead of Dee Ford. That's kind of what I wanted to see. And they instead gave him the extension to where they're having to make the decision now down the road here. But they ended up being able to get Pat Mahomes out of the deal, so I'm happy about that, because the only other quarterback I really wanted back then was Derek Carr. So that aspect is, you know,
right.
I think Mahomes is going to be better than Carr in the long term, in my opinion. So it did end up working out for the best in my book. But, yeah, Alex is a guy right now, I think there's a lot of teams that are going to be interested in him for the same reason that I think the Chiefs were. He's a stabilizing presence on your roster. You know what you're getting from him at quarterback. And if you're a team that's had bad quarterback play for a long time, or you've had a turnstile of quarterbacks, he gives you consistency. He gives you toughness. He's able to stay on the field even when he's getting beat like a human pinata, which he proved back in 2014. And and that's because if you think about it, when you look at the Chiefs quarterback situation from the time whenever you and I were both at Metro, just how many quarterbacks they went through after Trent Green.
I try to forget.
And even before Joe Montana, when you had Bono, you had Gerbeck, you had so many of those quarterbacks, and you had Damon Heward at one point, and then you had Brody Croyle, and then you can name a list of like 10, Tyler Thigpen. You can name 10 to 12 quarterbacks. You never knew who the leader of that football team was going to be. So whenever Alex came here, that he created a five-year stabilizing presence while they could find their quarterback of the future and help develop him to get to this point. So now is the point where I think if you can find a good trade partner for Alex, do it, get that money back, let him get a fresh start somewhere else. Then Mahomes knows he's the guy, his team knows he's the guy, and then everybody can start moving forward and get re-energized for the 2018 season.
In terms of leadership, I believe Patrick Mahomes II will be much better than the 15 other guys you listed off there. I'm much more confident that Patrick Mahomes II can handle it. I'll do one more thing on Alex Smith, and then I want to get into the Super Bowl in the National Football League with you. We're talking with Nick Jacobs, 41 Action News. In terms of trade spots, if I'm Alex Smith and I have a choice, I don't know if he does. I don't know what's in his contract. I don't think he can block trades in the NFL, but they may be. I'm not sure. But if I'm Alex Smith and, you know, you can see the sunset, maybe he plays 8 more years. I don't know. Quarterbacks play till you're 40 now, apparently, and go to Super Bowls when they're 40. But if I'm at the point in the career where Alex Smith is, I want to go to a competitor or B, someplace warm. And the two things you don't find either one of those are in Cleveland, the Cleveland Browns. All right, they got John Dorsey as the GM. They hired Todd Haley as the offensive coordinator. And I could easily foresee a situation where you have Dorsey, Haley, and Alex Smith with the Cleveland Browns in 2018.
And then you could see the same issue we saw with Matt Castle when Todd Haley started yelling, took a timeout and started yelling him at the sidelines for not being able to get the play in that huddle. Todd just called a timeout to yell at him. So that, that's the thing I thought about. I was like, oh, Alex to Todd Haley, that would not work out well.
Well, Alex in Cleveland would be awful because, look, I've been to Cleveland. It's all right, but it's not some place I would want to live and have your kids going to school. Just there's nothing wrong with it. It's not a horrible city. It's just not my cup of tea. And the organization has such a long track record of failure since the re-expansion back into Cleveland. I don't have confidence. If I'm Alex Smith, I don't have confidence that it's going to get turned around in time for me to be a winner with that team. I don't see it.
Yeah, the places I think would fit him, potentially Buffalo, if they're going to do play action with Alex. I could see Buffalo fitting. I could see the Jets fitting. The Jaguars would already fit his skill set to a T, and he would be an upgrade over Bortles. And then the Arizona Cardinals, they're going to need a quarterback down there. And then I think those are probably the best landing spots. The Browns just give you – and the Browns could probably give you the most in return.
Most picks.
But from a Chiefs perspective.
They have 85 picks this year.
Wow, that's impressive. I mean, that's where I could see for the Chiefs. You're hoping you get something from the Browns, or maybe you get your first round pick back from the Bills if they want to give up one of those low 20s. But yeah, I think Arizona. If I'm Alex, I'm pushing for Arizona as the landing spot, or I'm pushing for Jaguars, like you said, two warm climates and two football teams that already have strong defenses and that don't have terrible run games.
And Arizona's got a great stadium. It's a great city. And Alex and his wife and their kids would be back closer to their family. Personally, I think that's the best land. If I'm just being selfish, Alex Smith, that's a good spot. All right, Nick Jacobs, 41 Action News. We're talking Chiefs in the National Football League. I got a couple of minutes left with you, Nick. Let's hit the Super Bowl. We're a week and a day away from the Super Bowl. On paper, by the way, go search online for the clip of Jerry Jones. I believe he's at the Pro Bowl and he's being asked about the Super Bowl matchup, and he talks about the Eagles quarterback and he says, oh, that kid Cobb, Kevin Cobb, and they're like, no. And he's like, oh, Folk, I meant Folk. Strike two. He doesn't know that Nick Foles is the quarterback for the Eagles. That said, On paper going in, Patriots and Eagles, total mismatch. If it's Tom Brady versus Nick Foles, complete mismatch. But after watching what the Eagles did to the Vikings last week and pry them apart, and the performance that Nick Foles has had the last two games, I give them a shooter's chance, as they say in basketball. I'm not going to pick the Eagles. That's ridiculous. I'm not going to pick the Eagles, but I'm not going to be shocked if the Eagles walk out there and play right with the Patriots.
Yeah, I won't be either. It's just a matter of if the Eagles can hop on the Patriots early and get out to a 14 or 21 point lead, because Tom Brady wants that, as we learned last year, once that third quarter hits, and especially that fourth quarter, Tom just turns into laser focus, and you need to have at least a 21 point lead to just hold on against Brady and his relentlessness when it comes to the end. And you can watch it on 41 Action News along with the Olympics coming up.
That's so right.
Those will both be on there. So yeah, I can't bet against Brady, and it's going to be the last time McDaniels, Patricia, Belichick, and Brady are all going to be together before McDaniels and Patricia go their separate ways with the Lions and Colts. So I'm rooting for the Eagles as well. And the interesting factor here would be that this is the third coach from the Andy Reid tree since 2013 that'll be coaching in the Super Bowl, since it'll be Doug Peterson, Ron Rivera, and John Harbaugh. But if Doug wins, he's only the second coach that I can remember in Andy Reid's tree other than John Harbaugh that will have won the Super Bowl. So for Doug to do that in the second year, he'd be a legend in Philly after that. So it'll be interesting as it happens. I'm rooting for the Eagles, but like you, I expect the Patriots and Tom Brady to win another one.
Yeah, and Doug Peterson is a great example of why we focus so much more now on assistants and coordinators on your staff. It's not always about the head coach. He's got a great staff. Hey, Nick Jacobs, 41 Action News. Yes or no question, on the way out the door, will you watch the Pro Bowl start to finish?
Yes.
I knew it. You're a football junkie. Hey, Nick, have fun today. If you get a chance, walk out and around the plaza and just kind of enjoy everything and enjoy the Pro Bowl and the Super Bowl next week.
Yeah, I'll try, but, you know, I don't know if I'll have enough time. You know, all grown up people don't know if I'll have enough time.
Might not be enough time. There's so much to do. All right, Nick, hey, thank you very much.
All right, take care, Brad.
All right, that is Nick Jacobs, 41 Action News. Follow him on Twitter, at Jacobs71. He does a great job of posting videos and breakdowns and all kinds of stuff on the Chiefs and the National Football League. All right, we've got our final break here, I believe, and then our final segment. We're going to bring in Jarrett Sutton, former Missouri Tigers basketball star, and we'll talk Missouri and Mississippi State, and we'll go all over college basketball because Jarrett's also an NBA scout and works for the SEC Network. All right, time for a quick break. I am Brad Porter. You're listening to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810. WHB.
This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
There we go. Good flow. Heads into the lunch hour across Kansas City in the metro area. Beautiful Saturday afternoon. I am Brad Porter. You're listening to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Coming up at noon, Joshua Briscoe takes over with Jayhawk Game Day. Then at 2 o'clock, the Kansas Network pregame show. At 3:30, Texas A&M at KU live here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And then the night caps off with some NBA, the Boston Celtics and the Golden State Warriors. I believe that tip is scheduled for 7:30. All right, we're going to flip back to college basketball here and bring in Jarrett Sutton, former Missouri Tigers great, now the NBA scout, works for the SEC Network, and a proud, Oak Park grad, right, Jarrett?
That's right. Proud of it.
and also has the world's number one Jarrett Sutton fan who works here at WHB in Stephen St. John. I think he's got – there's a little man crush there, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think we've developed that over the years.
Well, you do a great job when you're on the border with the Border Patrol and Stephen and Nate and Jake. And as we get into today's action, it is being billed as the Big 12 SEC Challenge, but for Missouri, it's just another SEC Challenge because there's not enough teams, so they'll be matched up with Mississippi State. And Missouri's coming off a couple of clunkers, going back to that game against Texas A&M and then against Auburn. Gosh, there was, a 7-, 8-, 9-minute period without a shot being taken, and So these were kind of peeling back the ugly peels of the onion, so to speak, after everything that was going so well early on.
Yeah, you know, you look at these two games against A&M and Auburn, two very different games and two very different teams that Missouri faced in A&M and Auburn. Texas A&M, definitely a team that likes to throw the ball inside. Robert Williams, Tyler Davis, they're back to full strength with help. DJ Hoga's back. Admin Gilder is a really good point guard for them that's been battling some injuries. So, you know, A&M was a team that was supposed to be atop the SEC and really has struggled because they haven't had guard play. And but now they're back. I think they got a good test today, obviously, against Kansas in Allen Fieldhouse in a game that I think a trap game somewhat for Kansas before they have to go to Bramlage and play K-State. But, you know, when you talk about A&M scoring 60 points, you know, Missouri will take that defensively. And then Missouri turns around and plays Auburn and gives up 91. And the identity of this Missouri basketball team is on the defensive end and playing with toughness and playing with grit. You know, but in that game against Auburn, Auburn had all the momentum. I thought they took the fight to Missouri. They played fast. The pace was just too much for Missouri. And, you know, we still talk about the point guard position when you talk about Missouri. And Jordan Geist has done as good a job as he can. The athleticism and the ability to create shots that Auburn had, I thought just Missouri didn't have that. And Jordan Barnett is a guy that can be that flashing attacking type player. You know, he shot the ball really well in the game, but, you know, I expect more from Jordan Barnett going to the rim, taking over the team on the offensive and not turning the ball over, playing aggressive. And he's got to be a guy that can continuously get your 14, 15 shot attempts. And then I still talk about Jeremiah Tillman. The foul trouble is the problem, but I thought he took steps back in this game. I thought his head wasn't in the game.
I agree with you. I thought I would never use the word quit. I don't think he quit, but he got so frustrated with maybe himself or the officiating, whatever it was, that he made very bad decisions that hurt his team.
Yeah, absolutely. And I almost look at it as letting go of the rope and just being so frustrated that you just lose all focus of what you're trying to actually accomplish, and that's winning a basketball game. The play that stands out to me was when he fouled the three-point shooter and then turned around and took an inbound pass and threw it to nobody when Missouri was getting pressed and didn't even, you know, care to look and see what the defense was doing and didn't even see Jordan Geist not even looking at him. So those little things are freshman mistakes, but how much longer are we going to call, you know, Jeremiah Tillman young and a freshman? He's got to keep developing and growing up and taking strides. And I just thought it was strides backwards in a game that they really could have used him and his ability on the interior, because Missouri did have the size, but Auburn had more energy and more athleticism and really gave Missouri a lot of fits. 20 turnovers and the block shots, too, from Auburn really made life difficult, swarming defense. And I thought Missouri just had such a difficult time getting the ball into their offense and into their secondary break and transition as well. And it showed against a really good athletic team in Auburn. And look, they play Mississippi State today. Mississippi State's got two really good guards in the Weatherspoon brothers, Quindary and Nick Weatherspoon. So their hands are going to be tied today as well.
We're talking with Jarrett Sutton, Missouri and Mississippi State. That'll be the night game tonight at 7:30. And Missouri will also be shorthanded against Mississippi State as the news has come out that Terrence Phillips has been suspended for a violation of team rules. We don't know what that is. They rarely say anything about that. It's just a violation of team rules, so it will be a short bench. But that could put the pressure on Cassius Robinson to play more. And we know, in particular, against Auburn had just an awful game. Texas A&M had the awful game. But a thin bench for Missouri in this game on the road.
Yeah, and you know, Brad, we go back to the beginning of the year when Missouri opened up against Iowa State, and they pulled out their starting five, and Michael Porter Jr. obviously was not starting five, but they had Cassius Robinson playing the point guard position, and I was taken back by that, knowing at the time they had Blake Harris, and I think Blake was the better athlete of all the point guards. I think he had the more upside and ability, but he was very young, and a lot in the process for Blake to develop as a player. And you just kind of saw flashes of it. But Cassius started, and it, to me, it was very much a sign of Konzo Martin not having trust with the point guard yet and really, you know, demanding that someone take ownership of the point guard position. And Cassius Robinson is not a natural point guard. He's more of a two guard. He's off the ball. So, you know, I'm okay with putting pressure on your veteran players. That's what this team needs. They need Jordan Barnett. They need Cassius Robinson. They need Kevin Poirier to step up and continuing to play well. Those three guys have been through the wars and the battles. And they need to start developing an ability to show the young guys how to really compete and how to close games. I thought Cassius Robertson did that against South Carolina on the road earlier this year. You know, Cash is a really good shooter. He's been streaky. But him and Jordan, we got to have guys from Missouri step up and create their own shots. And Cassius and Jordan can really provide that. But with doing that, they have to be aggressive. They have to want the ball. And they can't, you know, just put all the pressure and focus on Jordan Geis. You know, too many times Jordan's getting, you know, really pressured, and everybody's staring and look at him. Well, look at him, and there's no ball movement, and there's no
right.
passing going on. That's got to take place. Those are the adjustments that this offense has to make if they're going to want to improve. I think their defense is solid enough to where they can really depend on it, but offensively, they still got to put the ball in the hole, and that comes from good guard play and ball movement and player movement.
Are you listening to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City? I'm Brad Porter. We're talking with Jared Sutton, Missouri-Mississippi State tonight at 7:30. Mississippi State, you mentioned the Weathers brothers, pretty talented kids. Are there areas, considering the last two games for Mizzou, are there areas that they can look to play better? And are there things that Mississippi State does or does not do that that Missouri can take advantage of and perhaps exploit?
Well, the big thing I want to see in this game for Missouri is, number one, how do they respond after really getting dominated for a majority of the game? And I thought Auburn made a statement to the rest of the SEC that this is their league to win. You heard Bruce Pearl in his post-game comments talking about how, you know, he pushed his team to look at this as an opportunity to make a statement because not a lot of teams are going to go into Mizzou Arena and beat Missouri. And I thought that was a great sign for Missouri, but also a sign of, you know, Missouri was not involved in that game. They made it a two-point game about 12 minutes to play. And then the rest of the game, it was almost like that they were just back on their heels and Auburn took the fight to them. I think when you look at this Mississippi State team, you know, they're a team that can take bad shots. I watched them against Kentucky. They can get sped up if you pressure them and if you compete with them. You know, Nick Weatherspoon is not shooting the ball all that well. He's a five-star recruit. He's the brother of Quindary. Quindary's probably their best player. He's a guy that is a versatile guard that can score the ball in multiple ways. It's going to be a tough assignment for Cassius Robertson or Jordan Barnett. And look, this is an athletic Mississippi State team. You look at Auburn, very athletic, probably better athletes than Missouri. Mississippi State's probably got the better athletes of these two teams. But how is Missouri going to respond? They got to depend on their defense and really forcing Mississippi State into contested shots, closing out on the three-point line, running shooters off the three-point line, really, I think, demanding of their guard play, putting pressure on guys like Lamar Peters and Tyson Carter. Tyson Carter and Lamar Peters were two returners that can really shoot the ball, but they're struggling. So for Missouri to win this game, you know, it still is about their defense. Can they lock down? Can they be the team that brings the momentum and starts fast? Missouri has not started games fast, which makes them depend so much upon, you know, trying to shoot shots late in the shot clock or taking contested shots or forcing the issue and not trusting themselves, turning the ball over. 20 turnovers against Auburn, not going to get it done. They got to take care of the basketball in this game. And they got to look for opportunities to attack and put fouls on guys like Eric Holman, who is a shot blocker. But Jordan Barnett is probably just as good as an athlete as Eric Holman. I want to see Jordan Barnett go to the rim, go to the glass, get to the free throw line, and really, I think, put pressure on Mississippi State to try to get a lead early and then build on that. When you're on the road, you got to make shots, but you got to get some confidence. And Missouri didn't have any confidence in that first half against Auburn. They were just trying to chip away to stay in the game. I'd like for them to come out and get a lead and start building on it and see if they can't get some confidence going as they continue league play here as we start February.
Jared, you bring up a really good point. I think maybe it's become a lost art in the era of the three-pointer that we're now in and guys wanting to launch rockets all day long. You mentioned driving to the basket and drawing fouls. Is that a lost art? Is that not emphasized the way it used to be, or are players with, you know, AAU systems and things like that just not conditioned to do that?
Oh, I think it's a good point. I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily a lost art. I think we are in an era where, you know, teams and coaches are starting to realize the benefit and the value of having shooters. I mean, you look at this Missouri team and where they're at. I mean, my gosh, over the last 3 years, they were a god-awful three-point shooting team. They were one of the worst in college basketball and all the Power Five. And now, you know, a couple of weeks ago, they were a top 20 three-point shooting team. I think those percentages has probably gone down. They haven't shot it well their last two games. They've been streaky, but the three-point shot has been huge for them. I mean, finding Cassius Robertson, finding a guy that can catch the ball and knock down shots, and Jordan Barnett, you know, really improving his three-point shot and his percentages from the free-throw line and from the field. I think the three-point shot does a good job of spreading the floor, of really opening up driving lanes, opening up the paint a little bit for your big guys. Because when you can't shoot three-point shots, when you become one-dimensional, you become easier to guard. But I think players can fall in love with the three-point shot. And to me, I'm big on having a two-way player and having a player that's versatile. Jordan Barnett is that guy. And when you fall in love with the three-point shot, it can snake bite you, and it has with Missouri. You can't live and die on the three-point shot. And when the shot's falling, that's great. But if it's not falling, you got to find other ways to get to the foul stripe, to get points on the board, to try to get easy ones. A lot of that has to do with playing in transition, picking up the pace, playing faster. That's something Konzo has really wanted. I don't think that was the game plan against Auburn, but they got to find ways to create better offense, to create easier opportunities to score the basketball. Because what we saw against Auburn was they were back on their heels, they weren't moving, they were on top of each other, they didn't get good looks. And to get good looks, to open up your three-point shot, you got to drive the ball. You got to throw it inside. You got to create offense at the rim, because that's going to open up other opportunities and driving lanes, and also shooting opportunities for your shooters.
You're listening to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. I'm Brad Porter. We're talking with Jared Sutton, former Missouri Tiger, now scouts for the NBA and works for the SEC Network. So, Jared, I'm going to ask you about this because I know Kevin Keatsman is going to be glued in today to Georgia at K-State. That's the first local game up at 1 o'clock. Watching Georgia, I know they've had their struggles. They didn't play well against Auburn about a week and a half ago. They had a tough double overtime loss to Arkansas. But what does Georgia bring to the table? For K-State fans, they're going to be in Manhattan. I don't know if Keats is going over there today or not, but what kind of basketball does Georgia bring to Manhattan? And with K-State, I think K-State's one of the hottest teams in America right now. I love watching Barry Brown. I love watching Dean Wade, what they've done since the KU loss. What should we expect in this matchup? How does Georgia match up with K-State?
Yeah, so the two guys that are going to be focused in this game are Barry Brown and Yonte Maton of Georgia. Yonte Maton, one of the best big men in the SEC and maybe in all of college basketball. Georgia just played a double overtime game against Arkansas, down to the wire game. Yonte Maton had 26 and 15 and just really a dominating type player, a guy you can throw the ball to that can pass out of double teams. He's going to play every minute in this game. If he can stay out of foul trouble, that's one thing that he's got to continue to improve on, is staying out of foul trouble, which he's done. Yonte can shoot the three a little bit as well. That's an area of his game that he's really improved on. But I think another player for Georgia that Kansas State needs to really circle is Juwan Parker. He's not much of an offensive player, but he is a locked-down defender. And Juwan Parker will have the assignment of Barry Brown in this game, and that's going to be a good matchup. And I think for Kansas State, you know, they're starting to play their brand of basketball. They got talent. They put the ball in Barry Brown's hands. They bring in Dean Wade. Dean is great in the pick and pop. He can shoot it. Dean has been more aggressive. He's been more consistent, which is something I've really wanted to see out of him, is just the ability to take a great game to the next and continue to build and build. And, you know, they've had other players step up as well. And so for this game, you know, for Kansas State to win, that they have to execute down the stretch and continue to close games and rebound the basketball in this game. You know, there's Agbede as well, their center for Georgia, that's a really good rebounder. He didn't play a good game against Arkansas, but he's a guy that is an activity, energy type of guy, and Kansas State has to match that. Kansas State's good in their own building. They're playing with a ton of confidence. Obviously, they smacked Oklahoma in a game that I was so impressed with how good they shared the ball, the balance. And Kansas State's a team that moves well without the basketball. That's such a big emphasis for me in college basketball, is teams that cut, screen, move well without the ball, or don't over-dribble, don't kill the ball on the ground. And Kansas State's done a really good job with that. They can't look ahead to Kansas either, because Georgia is a team that can snake bite you. And if they play well and shoot the ball well, they're not necessarily a good three-point shooting team, but if they shoot it well, they shot well against Arkansas, if they shoot well against K-State, they'll have an opportunity. So for Kansas State, it's continuing to play your game, to play your brand of basketball, and then close games, execute games, and not go away from your offense. If they do that, they'll be fine in this ballgame.
All right, Jared Sutton, final thing for you. Texas A&M at Kansas, 3:30 tip-off. You can hear it live right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. How was Texas A&M misread going into the season? Because they were picked as a team that could contend for an SEC championship, and had thoughts of playing into possibly an Elite Eight or a Final Four spot. How did we misread Texas A&M? Or were they bitten by the injury bug? What happened to their slow start?
Yeah, well, it's weird to look at Texas A&M in the SEC and see them at 2-6. I just wasn't expecting that. As a team that's got a lot of size, that they have NBA caliber athletes. You know, I think a big area in their season that's really struggled with them is they've had to suspend DJ Hogue twice this year for an indefinite leave of absence, breaking team rules. Just not good, because DJ Hogue is a player that is 6'9", can shoot the ball, can pass it. You know, the last year they really struggled with turnovers. They could not handle the ball. Robert Williams was efficient. You know, I think Tyler Davis was still just a great player. Both those guys were really consistent. But they could not handle the ball. They couldn't handle pressure at all. They turned it over. And I thought they would improve this year with Admon Gilder and DJ Hoke stepping up and being different type of players. But they just have not got that. I think Coach Kennedy has been frustrated. Isaac Chu is an assistant there. He was a coach for me at Missouri. And I talked to him a couple times, and he just said they just can't find the focus for 40 minutes. They won't buy in to the details of their game plans. They won't take care of the ball. They won't do little things that you got to do to win ball games. And I think they were so dependent on their athleticism and knowing that they have a lot of talent, but they just weren't locking in and engaging into the details. And now they're starting to do that a little bit. They're a dangerous team. But I still think Kansas is a team that, if they shoot it well, if Sima Kailuk, LeGerald Vick, Devontae Graham really play well, they'll have a chance. Because I think this game is about guard play. But I also think you got to look now at Azubuike and this whole poke-a-doke, you know,
right, exactly,
type of game. It's going to be that's going to be a piece in this game that to look for. I don't know when Coach Kennedy will go to it, but I do think he will look for it in the second half. But I think, you know, Kansas has got to continue to play their game, play their style, play their brand. Everybody wants to talk about the poke-a-doke, but look, they beat Oklahoma if they lock down and they make stops, which is what Kansas does to win games, to win those close games. They execute and they don't break down defensively. They broke down in that Oklahoma game. They left Brady Manning for a wide open three. They didn't switch the ball screen. If Kansas does what they do, and that is locking down defensively, executing, not turning the ball over, closing games out by making free throws and executing, they're the team to win this game. But I think it's going to be closer than what people think. I think A&M has a really good chance if they play well and they start fast and they put Kansas back on their heels, which we've seen. Arizona State has done that. Washington has done that. They shoot it well, they'll have an opportunity. So I think it's going to be a good game and a good matchup.
All right, Jared Sutton, former Missouri Tigers, great regular here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I know you're an NBA guy too, so I'll leave you with this one. I'm going to be torn tonight, so this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to watch Missouri and Mississippi State on TV, and then I'm going to have my radio here on 810 WHB listening to Boston Celtics Golden State Warriors, because I can't wait for that game too. All right, how about that?
It's going to be a great one. I'm torn too. NBA Saturday primetime on ABC is my favorite part of the basketball season. I love college basketball, but NBA primetime on Saturday night, I live for it. I'm glad the league did that.
It reminds me of the old NBC John Tesh music opening theme song days. It's good stuff. Hey, Jared,
exactly.
Enjoy all the games tonight. I appreciate your insight, and have a great weekend.
All right, thanks, Brad. Thanks for having me.
All right, that's Jared Sutton joining us here on Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. And again, that Boston Celtics-Golden State Warriors game tonight right here on WHB. All right, we'll take a timeout. We come back, some final thoughts as we head into what is a gorgeous day across Kansas City in the Midwest. My name is Brad Porter. You're listening to Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I like that for a final. I like that. Who is that? Rudy Salazar? Okay, man, they kind of come and go. Like every 3 or 4 years, they disappear. They have a hit, and then they go away for a while.
The Postal Service was where it was at.
Ben
Gibbard. Side project.
Absolutely. Final couple of minutes here on Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Brad Porter with Rudy Salazar running the board. He's got his proud UK pullover on, which he always wears on the weekends. And Kentucky has a big game in Morgantown against West Virginia today. Jed Marshall's also in here for the final couple of minutes. All right, Big 12 SEC Challenge, Jed Marshall. Does this grab your imagination?
It does. I actually like the SEC Challenge.
Okay.
Appreciate the breaking up the monotony of the conference play. You get to see a different team, maybe a team that you'll match up against with possibly in the tournament.
Right.
So I like it.
For me, and look, I didn't go to Kansas, but I cover Kansas. To me, it couldn't happen at a worse time. You're coming off a game against Oklahoma that you botched the last 3 to 4 minutes, and then you got your rival, K-State, on Big Monday on short turnaround. This couldn't come at a worse time for Kansas or K-State.
Well, it's a look-ahead game for sure for the Jayhawks and for the Wildcats. The one thing that the Jayhawks do have is they're playing at Allen Fieldhouse, where they're pretty good. Maybe not as good this year, but normally pretty good.
All right, a couple minutes left. This is a gorgeous day today, and I'm trying to figure out, what am I going to do today? I mean, I got some stuff to do around the house, but something fun outside.
Go for a bike ride.
Go for a bike ride. I haven't ridden my bike in years.
Really?
I'd have to.
I know which part of town you live in. There's some good bike trails over there.
There are. The trolley trail. I live in Waldo area, and the trolley trail is fantastic. And what are you going to do? You going to get out today? Going to do something fun?
I probably will. I'm going to go walk around Antioch Park, I think.
All right.
Swing by Mom and Dad's for a minute after this.
And then it's back in to watch some basketball. So we talked about this with a couple of guests today. Obviously, we got the full college schedule. And then tonight, I told you my kids are into the NBA. Boston Celtics, Golden State Warriors. I am now looking to these games, these big matchups, the way I did when I was a kid, when it was Celtics-Lakers or Jordan and the Bulls taking on the Pistons or the 76ers even at that time. I love these big matchups, and the NBA has picked the right matchups for their showcase games.
In a conversation we had a few weeks ago off the air, actually talking about how the NBA does a great job marketing their stars, making them the forefront so that you're drawn, even if I'm a huge NBA guy. Even if you're just a fan of watching the players, like if it's a Bucks game, you get Giannis. You know, the Celtics have a plethora of stars. Obviously, Golden State does as well. But they just do such a great job of marketing their stars.
And my kids laugh at me because whenever we talk about Giannis, I completely fall on my face trying to pronounce his last name. And I've heard it thousands of times. Rudy, what is it? Okay. My kids can say it perfectly. My oldest one, my 13-year-old, has known it since day one. He loves him.
You stick with the Greek.
My 11-year-old has learned it. But if you've seen the highlights from last night's games, Giannis had about a five-stepper a la Spee Mikhailik.
He didn't travel at all.
All right, so coming up next, Jayhawk Game Day with Josh Briscoe at noon, 2 o'clock, Kansas Network pregame, 3:30, Texas A&M in Kansas, and NBA, Boston Celtics, Golden State at 7 o'clock. Thanks to our producer, Rudy Salazar. Thanks for Jed Marshall and all of our guests. I am Brad Porter. Have a great day. You're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.